This is one of my favorite, all-time favorite feel-good movies. For two reasons. One is, if you have ever had a teacher who has had a major impact on your life, you just have to love the storyline of Mr. Holland's Opus. And it's kind of weird, isn't it, that we just can't help but call him Mr. and Mrs. I mean, even when you're an adult, I grew up in a small town and raised my kids in a small town, and so a lot of the teachers that I had when I was in school also taught my kids. And so it was really kind of weird going to parent-teachers conferences as an adult and still having to call them Miss Fadre and Mr. Ideas, because it just felt so weird to say, hey, Elroy, you know. And so, but there's something about that respect when they've had that impact on your life. And so that's one of the reasons why I love this movie. The second reason is the power of the baton. I would love, once in my life, to stand in front of a big symphony with the baton in my hand and a disco. Boom! You know, and just have the music swell and be awesome. And I, any Mr. Bean fans? Mr. Bean? Come on, be honest. There you go. Okay, I know it's kind of a weird thing, but if you don't know who Mr. Bean is, Google it. And Google Mr. Bean leading an orchestra. Because it is hilarious, because Mr. Bean is this really weird guy that never talks. And he stops and gives a gift to a Salvation Army band that's playing Christmas carols. And the guy hands him the baton so that he could take the gift that he gave and put it away. And he's standing there with the baton, and he moves it, and the band strikes a chord. And he's like, you know, only like Mr. Bean could do. And pretty soon he's directing this whole thing and making them hold notes forever. And that would be me. That's exactly what I would do if I had that opportunity to have the power of the baton. So I love this movie because of those two things. It would just be awesome. Plus, I'm an old guy, and I'm at that age where I'm thinking legacy is an awesome thing to leave behind. And that's the storyline of Mr. Holland's Opus. But today we're in week three of this series that we've been doing about the seven deadly sins. And today we're talking about sloth. And that's not a word that we use a whole lot. And you guys that are sitting close, you're going to be thankful that I don't say sloth too much, because it's really easy to spit when you say sloth. And you can move if you want to, all right? But here's the deal. Sloth is not a word that we use a lot. And so sometimes when we're talking about sloth, we have no idea what it is. But normally in a church setting, sloth is normally referred to as being lazy, right? And when you look in the Bible, the book of Proverbs has a lot to say about sloth or laziness. And a lot of translations change out the word to sluggard or slackered or something like that. But a couple of examples. Proverbs 13:4 says, "A sluggard's appetite is never filled, but the desires of the diligent are fully satisfied." And then in Proverbs 21:25 says, "The craving of a sluggard will be the death of him, because his hands refuse to work." But to really understand when this monk got together to put together this list of the seven deadly sins, you know, the translation originally was sadness, but yet that really didn't grasp it, and so they kept struggling with coming up with the right word, and they finally landed on this Latin word for sloth that we call sloth in English. And that Latin word is acedia. And to really understand when we're talking about this deadly sin of sloth, you've got to understand what acedia is, because that will help us all realize why it's deadly. Okay? And it's so much more than just being lazy, because the word actually means to be indifferent or to just not care. Apathy is another word that's used a lot of times. And so when you tell somebody that you're going to talk about sloth, the first thing they think of is the slow-moving animal. at the zoo, and I was tempted to show that scene in the movie Zootopia with the sloth. Have you ever seen that? Because it's awesome, and it would have been hilarious, you know, but that's really hard to cut down because it moves so slow. And we didn't do that, but we think about sloth in that way. But this morning, I want us to look at this word acedia because it really helps us understand why this is so deadly, because acedia starts as not caring. But when it's fully engulfed in a person's life, it's not only that they don't care, it's that they don't care that they don't care. And so it's much deeper, and it's something that just happens to us, and it has nothing to do with how hard we work or how busy we are all the time. Because when we were talking about dividing up these seven deadly sins, you know, there were certain sins that I just wanted to stay away from because I thought, you know, I don't want to have to teach on gluttony. I mean, stand up here and look like this and teach on gluttony, I mean, that doesn't work, right? And I really didn't want to talk about lust because I'm a guy and I have eyes, so I didn't really want to talk about that. And so I thought I was going to be safe with sloth. Because I've always considered myself, you know, hardworking, and I was raised in that kind of a home where my parents, you know, always said, you got to get out there and work hard, you know, and make a living. I own my own business for 26 years and worked hard at it and had success through that, through just plain old hard work. So I never thought that I would have a problem with sloth. And I have to tell you, God really beat me up on this because this stupid word, acedia, means so much more than just being lazy. And in fact, acedia can be found very much today in all of our busy lives. And the truth of the matter is that if you are breathing, if you are a human, you at times will suffer with acedia, with that act of not really caring. And so I wanted to start out this morning just kind of wrapping up an understanding of what that is. And Kathleen Norris wrote a book called Acedia and Me. And I've read excerpts of it, and I am totally convinced now that I've got to get it and read the whole thing because just a little bit of excerpts that I've read from it have just impacted me. And this is what she talks about, acedia. She says, acedia belongs to many. Anyone who pursues a creative discipline, anyone whose life is bounded by routine, anyone who's been married for more than 10 years. In other words, everyone engaged in the pursuit of life suffers sloth. We appear to be anything but slothful. Yet that is exactly what we are as we do more and care less and feel pressured to do still more. And that is what we're talking about when we're talking about acedia. Now, I think it's really important for us to just take a minute here because it's really easy to confuse depression and acedia. Okay? And they're very close cousins, and sometimes they kind of look alike. And so I really want to push this because it's so important for you to understand this. Because with depression, you want things to get better. Your desire, your deep down desire is to be able to get life back to normal. And you want to make those changes. You really, really want to, but you are just incapable of doing so because of the depression that's living out in your life. And so you can't do it. But with acedia is different. Because with acedia, it's simply making a choice not to do those things because you don't care. And there's a huge difference there. And the problem is that a lot of us that just deal with acedia, we really make people who are dealing with depression very upset because we give them all this great advice. And it's advice like, oh, come on, you just need to decide that you're going to live again. You need to decide that tomorrow you're going to step outside, sing a happy tune, and skip down the street and have everybody look at you like you're weird. But that's the kind of advice that we give. You need to pray more. You need to pray harder. Come on, you can do this. And we give them all this advice, and the whole time they're just wanting to punch us in the face because they want to, but they're not capable of it. And we've talked about a lot about depression here. We did a whole series about it to try and get people to understand that it's this condition of the mind and the soul that so many times it needs a lot of counseling, and a lot of times it needs medication in order to be able to pull out of that. But acedia is different. The things when you say you need to make the choice to change things, you need to do this, or you need to pray harder, you need to really get connected with people, those things work for acedia. And the line there is really gray, and a lot of times you can slide back and forth between both worlds. And a lot of times the habits that are developed under the cloud of depression end up showing up in a lifestyle of acedia. And that's what makes it complicated sometimes, in really understanding what the difference is. But I can tell you from personal experience that you can tell the difference if you're honest with yourself. And that's why this whole thing of studying for this was so hard on me, because it brought understanding to myself when I had been living in depression and when I had been living in acedia. Okay? If you've been around Mosaic very long, you kind of know my story a little bit, but I am affectionately known around here as the divorce guy. Okay, it's awesome. You know, it's a great thing to be known for. But I was married to Allison, my wife. We've been married for 12 wonderful years. She's amazing. I love her very much. She's beautiful and all those good things that I have to say. But I was also married prior to that for 25 years, and that marriage ended after my wife decided that she liked the pastor of our church more than she liked me. And so our long, painful story, a lot of mess, a lot of hardship, a lot of pain, and that marriage ended in divorce. And I spent a lot of time following that depressed. And at times in really deep depression, when it was not even being able to lift my head off a pillow or just wanting to check out. And it took a lot of really good people around me and a lot of counseling and some medication to be able to finally break free from that after a while. And I was really thankful that I had those people around me that were able to kind of push me through that, because I wasn't capable. But it was years later, in fact, it hasn't really been all that long ago, that I thought I was slipping back into that depression. Because I hated my job, and I had totally detached in all my relationships. As a dad, months had gone by since I had talked to my kids, and my kids were all out of the house, but months had gone by and I hadn't talked to them, and I didn't care. As a husband, I was hurting Allison just by not loving her like she deserved to be loved. And honestly, I didn't care. I couldn't pray, and I didn't care that I couldn't pray. Spiritually, I was in about as desert of a place as I could possibly be. And I really thought for a while that, you know, oh man, I'm slipping back into this depression and stuff. But now I can see that it was really more, a lot more about just choices that I either needed to make and was refusing to make those choices, or dumb choices that I was making, and allowing myself to just constantly live in that place of anger and pain and just choosing not to make those changes. And I have to tell you, it was a tough time that felt a lot like depression, but I knew that it wasn't. I knew that I could make some changes that would definitely impact that. And I love what Kathleen Norris, how she describes it. She says, sloth certainly creeps in and robs us of true kingdom living. Days become weeks, and weeks become months, and turn into years of seeing life pass us by, not investing in what matters to God. Then one day, we look back on life with regrets. And you see, acedia is not confined to what we like to think about a lot, where it's a 45-year-old guy living in his mom's basement playing video games all day. It's much more than that. It's top CEOs of Fortune 500 companies who find themselves just plowing through life with no fulfillment, no happiness. They have everything, but yet they have nothing. And it goes from there all the way down to somebody who's flipping burgers at McDonald's and hates every flip of the burger. And it's rampant in the church, because we have tons of people who come to church every Sunday and go through the motions of being a follower of Christ, and yet they don't care. And they pass by opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to show that they care, but they really don't care. And that's exactly what makes this acedia so deadly. It's not something that just, boom, happens, and you're in that place. It's something that happens gradually. It slowly consumes us, like being pulled down in a quicksand of apathy. And suddenly you wake up and you realize you don't care. That's exactly what happened to me. I woke up to the fact that I didn't care that I didn't have that relationship with my kids. I didn't care that I didn't have that relationship with Allison. And I didn't care that I went to work every day hating what I was doing. And it slowly, slowly happened. And that brings me back to Mr. Holland. Because what if Mr. Holland had ended his career the same way that he began his career? When he began it hating the people that he worked with, he hated the kids, he hated doing what he was doing, it was robbing him of his dream. What if he continued that for the 30 to 40 years that he was in that position? What would have happened? What would have been the storyline? There would not have been an auditorium filled with people cheering. There probably wouldn't have been a wife and son sitting beside him at his retirement. And there definitely would not have been a frustrated clarinet player who is now governor saying the words that she said to him, that, Mr. Holland, we are your symphony. None of that would have happened. In fact, if he had stayed in that place of being angry that he was teaching instead of composing, an opus would have never been written, because all those creative juices that kept him going would have just dried up and blown away. And nothing would have happened. But here's the deal. There was that moment where he made the choice to push Acedia away and care. When he called that redheaded gal to the front, Miss Lang, and began to care whether she could play that song, it changed him in that moment. And you could see it in his eyes. Because when we begin to care for other people, it changes us. And it was an amazing thing to be able to watch all that happen. And so I've got to ask you this question. Which Mr. Holland are you? Are you the Mr. Holland right now that just hates what you're doing, that is just going through the motions of life just to get by, can't wait for the day to get over? Or are you the Mr. Holland who is writing that symphony? Because that's a great question to ask ourselves in this place. Now I want the guys to go ahead and come on up because I really want us to focus in for a minute and to ask yourself this very simple question. What are you slothing? What is it that you know deep down in your heart that you need to do? Maybe it's a conversation that you've needed to have for a long time, and you know that you need to have that conversation, but you've just put it off and said, no, it's too hard, it's too painful, I'm not going to do it. Maybe it's that coworker at work that you've had so many opportunities to invite into a conversation about Christ. You know it's what they need. You know that's the message they need to hear, but you don't do it. You know, and I thought about that a lot just in my weekly life. And when you realize that when you live out acedia, it's really saying, I don't care. And so when you start putting it in that context of that coworker, what are you saying to them? You're saying, I really don't care. Or that person that you need to have that conversation with, you're really saying to them, I don't care. Maybe it's that dream that you've had your whole life. This is something that God's just burned into your soul that you want to do. And you just decided, nope, I'm not going to do it. Then we're saying to God, I don't care. And when we really begin to see how deadly this is, how it robs us of those dreams, how it robs us of the plans that God can work out in our lives and the things that he can make happen for us, and those opportunities that he throws down right before us that we walk blindly over because we don't care. Man, now you understand why God kicked my butt with this, is because I've lived long enough to know the opportunities that I've missed. And as I look back on those, almost every one of them was because of acedia in my life, of just not caring. So I just want to ask you right now, I just want you to just take a minute and bow your head and just close your eyes, because the natural thing for you to do right now is to just slough this all away. If God's stirring something in your heart the obvious thing to happen right now is for you to just push it away and say, no, I don't care. I'm not going to let this get to me because it's scary. It's painful. I can't do it. No, I won't do it. I don't care. And I just want to challenge you this morning to push back. I just want to challenge you this morning to say, no, I'm not going to continue to live this way. I'm going to push away acedia, and I'm going to take a stand. And this morning, if that's what you're feeling, if this morning, if God stirred in your heart this thing that you know you need to address, I'm just going to ask you to do something really, really difficult, but I firmly believe it will be the first step in making a change. And I just want you to stand up. Father, I pray that through your Spirit, you will empower each person that's standing right now to be able to take the steps they need to push this away. Father, it's so good to know that you have pursued us, that you have placed this in our hearts. And just help us be bold enough to step forward. Amen.